Surprise, everyone. Hello. Today, we have a little special surprise episode. I was going to call it a mini episode, but I really don't think it will be mini. We're going to be talking about this for like hours. I can just feel it. This episode was not supposed to exist, but after seeing this film and seeing where it ranks on a particular actor's filmography on Rotten Tomatoes, felt like it needed to be discussed. So I'd like you all to cast your minds back to the end of May, when I was joined by Alex to discuss Florence Pugh. And we discussed her highest and lowest films, and we were also talking to each other about how excited we were for Don't Worry Darling. Fast forward a few months, the film's been released. The lead up to that release was an absolute mess. And then the film gets released and we find out that it's now Florence Pugh's lowest rated film on Rotten Tomatoes. And it's been slated by so many people. And today I'm joined by Alex once again, and also Billy, because we just want to discuss our thoughts and like talk about whether it really deserves to be her lowest. We need to correct the slander. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
The episode could be super short and I could just be like, no, it doesn't deserve to be her.
We don't need to explain ourselves.
The end.
Bye. It's over.
1 minute 30 and we're done.
Thank you for having us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You wish it was going to be 1 minute 30.
So, yeah, previously, so when me and Alex did our original episode, obviously I usually go off IMDb as the highest and lowest. So her lowest on IMDb was and is still Malevolent, which we discussed. But her Rotten Tomatoes ones has changed, and it's now Don't Worry Darling, which was released, what was it, like a week ago? Was it a week ago?
Has it only been a week?
I think it has only been a week, yeah.
And it feels like it's been an age.
It was released a week ago at the time of recording this, and it has now become her lowest on Rotten Tomatoes. It has a score of 38%.
Oh my.
Ugh. It is certified rotten, apparently, according to the critics.
That green old splat.
And not the green splat. We're going to discuss the film, what we actually thought about it, whether we think it should be her lowest. We're just going to vibe. And this will be chaotic. Okay, so to really understand how we got here, I thought it would be important to do a little recap of the drama. So, your girl did some research, and I have formulated a little timeline, which I will share with you now. On the 24th of April, 2020, it is announced that Florence Pugh has been cast alongside Shia LaBeouf and Chris Pine in Don't Worry Darling, the next feature film from director Olivia Wilde. Everyone is very excited. On September the 11th, 2020, it's announced that Harry Styles has replaced Shia LaBeouf due to scheduling conflicts, in quotation marks.
We love scheduling conflicts.
In November 2020, Olivia Wilde and Jason Sudeikis split up. Oh. That's important. In December of 2020, FKA Twigs sues Shia LaBeouf and accuses him of domestic abuse. Olivia Wilde posts screenshots of this article about the lawsuit expressing support for FKA Twigs. On December 24th, 2020, Variety reports that Shia didn't actually leave due to scheduling conflicts, but was actually exhibiting poor behaviour and was clashing with the cast and crew and was therefore let go from the production. In January of 2021, it is reported that Harry Styles and Wilde are dating. I just called her Wilde, Olivia Wilde. Are dating. Everyone loses their mind. In February of 2021, Don't Worry Darling finishes filming. So the first time I heard about this supposed on-set drama was in October of 2021, when a TikTok started circulating from a creator who posts demoir-style blind items on her account. And she claimed that she was contacted by a PA from the set with a story about a female director who was directing a film with a blonde actress and a former British boy band member. And in the video, they claim that the young blonde actress had to take over directing because the female director was too interested in her affair with the former British boy band member. Everyone assumes this is about Don't Worry, Darling. Then, in April 2022, Olivia Wilde is publicly served custody papers at, I think it was CinemaCon, the drama.
Yeah.
Oh my.
That was a rough moment.
Yeah, that feels like it was like yesterday, to be honest. And yeah, I still feel like it was an age ago.
In May of 2022, FKA Twigs wins her lawsuit. And in July of 2022, it was reported that allegedly Olivia Wilde and Harry Styles' relationship began as an affair on the set of Don't Worry, Darling. And frankly, that's none of our business, but okay. In August of 2022, Florence Pugh does an interview where she expresses annoyance at the excitement for the film being solely based on her on-screen intimacy with Harry Styles. On August the 24th, 2022, Olivia Wilde claims to have fired Shia LaBeouf because she has a no-arseholes policy and his process was not conducive to a healthy working environment. A mere 2 days later, on August the 26th, 2022, Shia releases a video message sent to him by Olivia Wilde where she begs him to stay and how she thinks this will be a wake-up call for Miss Flo. On the same day, it is announced that Florence Pugh will not be doing any promotion for the film. September the 5th, 2022, Venice Film Festival. Florence Pugh isn't there due to a scheduling conflict, but it's at the premiere. She's just not at the press junket. People think that Harry Styles spat on Chris Pine.
Oh my God, I forgot.
Chris Pine looks pained throughout the entire promotional interviews. And we get the world famous quote from Harry Styles. It's like a real movie. It's like a movie. It feels like a movie. September 6th, the day after this Venice Film Festival. Spitgate is debunked. It didn't happen. September 16th, it's announced that Olivia Wilde will no longer direct an upcoming biopic that she was supposed to be directing, citing issues with the script. September 17th, Don't Worry Darling cinematographer Matthew Labatique, I think that's how you say his name, claimed the rumours of an unprofessional set environment were untrue. Film gets released. September 25th, Kiki Layne makes an Instagram post stating that her part was mostly cut from the film. And there's also very recently been a article that came out where like 40 members of the crew came forward to sign this thing that said there was no unprofessional things happening on set.
Because that's so normal. So normal to do that.
And there we are. That's the timeline. I hope you enjoyed that.
When you actually like put it out like that, it's just... And the thing is, it's over like 3 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing. I think people are like taking this whole drama too far, but we have not had celebrity drama like this in so long that there is something mildly enjoyable about this. That's awful to say, but like the, you know, that gif of like Kim Kardashian like popping out of the bushes? That's how I feel.
Stop!
I feel like I'm just like peeking and having a look at all this drama and then just like going, okay, and then going back in and just not really caring about it. And then just occasionally just popping back out and being like, what's happened now? Oh, Harry Styles has spit on Chris Pine? Cool. Okay. Oh, he actually hasn't? Oh, okay. There's just like, it's like a whiplash. I'm just like, every day there was something new.
Especially around Venice. Like, that was just a whole mess.
The whole spit
game. That whole experience. I woke up the next day and I was like, sure.
I don't, I've watched that video so many times. Same. In like slow-mo. I've saved it to my camera roll so I can go through it like frame by frame.
Got Alex doing the forensic investigation.
And I genuinely believe it was like a little flicker of light that just seemed just landed in the right place for it to look like some spittle had come out of his mouth and landed in Chris Pine's lap.
It was the spirit.
There were videos
film.
From other angles as well. I was watching them, being like, "Did he? No, he didn't." My God.
I didn't even entertain it, honestly. I was like, I'm tired at this point.
And then he referenced it, didn't he, at a concert in Canada.
Yeah.
Just got back from spitting on Chris Pine.
Oh, Harry, you little comedian, you.
So funny. I feel like the only moment that Chris Pine actually enjoyed of his entire time at Venice was when he was photographing Florence Pugh on the red carpet.
Oh yeah, that,
which is very wholesome.
He was giving big, like, supportive friend
Kris Jenner vibes.
It was Kris Jenner. You're doing amazing, sweetie. You're
yeah, Miss Amy Poehler and Mean Girls vibes.
That whole thing, and everyone was like anticipating Florence arriving. We have the iconic video of her walking with her Aperol Spritz in her amazing purple outfit, which has already been memeified. Her makeup artist wearing a top that said Miss Flo. There's a part of me, like a slightly cynical part of me, that thinks all of this drama was manufactured to create hype for this film.
Well, the thing is it ties so, like, deeply into what the film is actually about that it really is not entirely incomprehensible that that could be true.
Maybe I'm right.
Maybe you are. I just feel like the if the internet can grasp onto something, it could literally be like a small piece of straw. But if it's grabbable, that's it. And it just runs with it. And then that's it. Then you can't really go back. There's no erasing it or reversing it. It's just that's it forever now. Like, it's done.
And I feel like it got so much worse throughout, like, the pandemic and everyone kind of moving online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just, I feel like, something about releases recently that I'm noticing that is just like attack, attack, attack. And I'm like, where do people have the energy to be this bothered about something?
I think I feel like the people involved in the projects have started to be maybe more honest as well, and not necessarily for the right reasons.
There's a lot to talk about with this film, but, like, overall, my overall, like, opinion of the film is that it's a good movie. It's a movie.
It feels like a movie. I'll give it to Harry. It does. It feels like a movie.
He's not wrong. I understand. Yeah.
It feels like a movie. It was enjoyable. I was thoroughly entertained. The performances were great. And, yeah. And for some reason, it's become this big thing where everyone's like, it's awful. It's disgusting. Don't get me wrong. It's not groundbreaking. It's not changing the face of cinema. But it was still enjoyable. Still entertaining. Still good.
Absolutely. Completely agree.
I remember the day that it came out on Rotten Tomatoes, that it got, like, what? Was it 38 or 32?
Something like that. Yeah.
Something like that. And my immediate reaction was like, I can't stand people, because this is entirely subject to the fact that she is a female director. And people can come for me all they want on that statement, but it is so, so very true. And maybe we're seeing it actually, like, simultaneously mirrored with Amsterdam's release. That's kind of getting, but it's already, like, climbing. It debuted at 20% and it's now at, like, what, 44%? I think. So it's like, guys, like, we have to kind of accept that we just still hate women female directors. And the fact that they won the Oscars for the last 2 years, people are like, nope, not like this. This is not how it's happening.
Women have had their dues now. That's it now. Yeah. Couple of Oscars, get gone. Go.
You've had your chance.
Where's Scorsese? Where's Tarantino? Fincher. Give me Fincher!
The film industry really said, get back to the kitchen. They really said
that. They did!
To the kitchen.
They saw Harry Styles making a meal and they were like,
No.
They saw him bashing those potatoes with a bottle of whiskey and they were like, what? See, this is why you need to be in the kitchen, ladies.
I assume people are prepared for spoilers on this. I don't know how I didn't clock the fact when he was mashing those potatoes, those non-boiled potatoes with a bottle of whiskey, how I didn't clock the fact that he was a massive incel. Like, I just don't know how I didn't put two and two together. Because that is really, like, strange behavior.
Like, oh, dear.
It's so funny to me, like, all the people complaining about this. And I'm just like, it's just because they're talking about you, isn't it? It's like all the men being like, this is not what men are like. It's because they're talking about you, aren't they?
They felt seen and they were like, no, hold on a minute. Olivia Wilde.
It's like Alexa Demi from Euphoria. Is this fucking Play About Us?
Yes. And this is the thing, like, because it's like, the film's talking about issues that are quite, like, prevalent in our modern society.
Exactly, and the response, it shows why we still need to be having these conversations, and people just can't wrap their head around that. They're like, guys, we're misogyny dead. It died. It died when they could vote.
Meanwhile, Andrew Tate's there like, I'm going to bring back masculinity. Like, it's literally what this character is. Chris Pine's character is Andrew Tate. He is Jordan Peterson. He is the people that we are like, that are literally like on their podcast with their microphone. She says as she's on her podcast with her microphone, being like, we need to bring back masculinity. Women have taken masculinity from men. And then you've got little Harry Styles with greasy hair sat there like listening to all of this and going, you know what, I will put my wife into a Matrix style simulation because the 50s was great. Like, the 50s.
I did see somebody make a fair point though in the fact that who would choose to have a British accent?
I have a theory about this. I have a theory that he couldn't maintain an American accent. And so they went, we're going to have to write in that you were British, that you chose to be British, because he couldn't maintain the American accent. Because would they have made Shia LaBeouf British? I don't think so.
I don't think they would have, no.
I didn't think he was that bad.
No, I actually don't think he was awful. I think he was all right.
I came out of the cinema and I was like, clearly these out of context, illegally recorded clips, you know, made him look worse than he was. But
yeah, it's like marriage through all over again.
It was still giving me GCSE drama a little bit.
Yeah, it was entry level acting.
Not even A level.
I mean, to be fair, it is entry level acting because we've got. Don't forget, like, he's only been in what, Dunkirk,
and he said nothing,
and he didn't say anything. Yeah. I also believe that the world just isn't ready for Northern accents in Hollywood, mainstream Hollywood films. I just don't think they are.
Yeah, all the Americans were like, his British accent horrible. I'm like, no, he's just from the North, babe.
He's just from Manchester.
Yeah, I was listening the entire time and I was like, is it, like, is he pretending he's from London, but he's actually not?
Our life, Alice!
It would have been better if he went full north.
I heard someone trying to give him, I think, more credit than he deserves when they said, oh, his accent will obviously, like, dip because he's in the simulation and he's not actually British, so maybe his accent would drop because of that. And I was like, I do feel like you're giving him a little bit too much credit there. I don't think he thought about that personally. I mean, maybe he
what
did.
Do you
maybe
mean?
I'm like,
it's clearly the case, Jeff.
Maybe Olivia Wilde was like, you need to add an American twang onto this. And he was like, okay, cool. And that's how we got that famous, you're going to put it all at risk. Good for Harry Styles. Have a nice time. The thing is, I do think it's unfair on Harry Styles because this is his first proper acting role and you put him opposite Florence Pugh.
Yeah, that's it's a harsh thing to do that, isn't it?
Did you see the person being like, this is why men don't want to be in films about women, because you put him, and I was like,
stop it.
I beg for you to judge.
I will admit though, it is kind of like putting, you know, Mr. Tumble in front of Frances McDormand or something like that.
No, it isn't.
No, but it is. Like, it is a little bit.
No,
but that's a testament to Florence Pugh's talent as an actress. I'm not saying that, like, women are taking away men's.
Yeah, but then who could he have been put across from.
Nobody! He shouldn't have been in the film!
The thing is that, like, I saw a lot of people being like, oh, Florence Pugh carried this film. And I couldn't help but be like, well, of course she did. She's the fucking lead. That's the point of lead. Everyone's like, oh my God, this film, like, Florence was the only one who carried. She's the lead. Who else is supposed to carry the film?
Yeah, people were just repeating things that they'd already heard and were like, I'll say that, but louder. And I'll change one of the words so it sounds like an original thought. It's like, you're just saying stuff that you think is correct. Please have an original thought.
Original thoughts? Could never be mine.
Could never be.
Original thoughts, but Billy, we're in a simulation.
Oh, yeah.
You can't have original thoughts in a
simulation. You know what, though? I came out and the first thing I did was turn to my husband and be like, what do you know?
Although I won't lie, though, if on the topic of original thoughts, some people on social media who have had some of their original thoughts of their own about how this film should have ended, really, we should probably stop that.
Oh, don't. The people who are being screenwriters on TikTok, I actually cannot. I have so many things to say.
I don't know about you guys, I was watching the film, I was like, okay, this clearly isn't 1950s America. I knew that. I was like, they're not in the
1950s. No, I knew that too. Because Johnny was like, oh, I bet that it's not actually the 50s. I was like, it's not. It's modern day. And he was like, what? And I was like, it's modern day. But I didn't realise until I read the synopsis after that it was supposed to be the 50s.
Well, I thought they'd built like a little town in some desert somewhere.
This
and we're
is what
hiding
my thought
from
was.
Normal society. That's what I thought.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Like cultish kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which it obviously was still, but like, yeah, more yeah. like.
So when we got the little jump scare of Harry Styles with his little eye things on, his eye simulators on, I was like, oh, I can see why people were going, oh, it's a bit like The Matrix, which I'd completely forgotten that someone had even mentioned. And then that bit popped up and I was like, ah, they did say that.
But yeah, I mean, like, look, because a lot of things I heard people saying before I went to watch it was, oh, it's so, like, I saw the reveal coming a mile off, like, oh, it was so predictable, like, from the first minute. And then, like, obviously people were saying about how basically, oh, it was such a good film until the final act and then it just shat itself. And I was like, and then I went into the film and I came out and I was like, am I stupid? Because I didn't see it coming at all. Like, obviously, like you, Jess, I kind of assumed that it was this kind of closed off community somewhere in the middle of a desert kind of thing. But I didn't call the simulation. I didn't know that it was going to be a simulation. And I just came out thinking, are people just saying that to like be even more negative about it? Or am I just really dumb?
I think people were just saying it to be negative. I really do.
I can't stand this take of like, it was great until the end. And I was like, that was the best part, honestly.
Did they not see that car chase scene? Thrilling.
Oh, so good.
I know. Oh, and then, so good.
Like the whole bit of her like running up to get to the.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I've never felt so like tense in my entire life.
So good. So
I'll tell you what though, when she stops, when she gets to the top and she just stops,
oh, don't.
I literally went over to my boyfriend and I went, why has she stopped? Why is she? And I heard someone behind me in the cinema be like, move.
Move.
Literally.
Go.
This girl just went, move. She just stood there.
She was thinking about it. She was like, oh, actually, I kind of do like my life here, but never mind.
She's like, do I want to drink some cocktails every day? No, I don't want to do that.
No, I'm good.
I also saw a lot of people talking about how they thought that Olivia Wilde's character Bunny was really like not relevant to the plot. I was like, low-key disagree, because she to me represents that woman, you know, all those like girls who are like, I wish I lived in the 50s. The 50s was such a simpler time. And it's like, yes, let's discount all the domestic abuse and racism, but yeah, sure, you get to wear some pretty dresses. And they're like, I wish I lived in the 50s. That's what she was. And she was like the, you know, the women who cheered when Roe v. Wade got overturned. She's like actively taking away these women's choice for her own fantasy. And everyone's like, she's so irrelevant to the plot. I'm like, just say you hate Olivia Wilde. Say it with your chest. Just say it.
Well, those are the same people who will say that Gordy was irrelevant to the plot of Nope, so...
Stop. We cannot get onto Nope.
No, no, we're not going to get onto Nope as well, but I'm just saying that that's very similar vibes. I mean, because a lot... I know another... negative criticism is that it was like really undercooked and like that
a lot of plot happens.
Yeah, like it wasn't there weren't many answers. Like a lot of it was left to our own interpretation. And look, I like having my hand held throughout a film just as much as the next person. I do. I like being dragged through the plot against my own will. But I really don't understand that criticism when it comes to this film, because mm-hmm. why does everything need to be served to you on a silver platter? Like, why do you need it all?
But just figure it out. It's all there. That's the thing, is like, it's just another thing of there are no unanswered questions. Everything is there.
The
McClane thing gets on my nerves. Obvious. That's how she first like discovered it. And that's also like what Kiki Lane's character, Margaret, was like, how she discovered it too. It's like, these things were there for a reason. Please, I beg, just use some imagination.
And like the, oh, what did the earthquake mean? Oh, why was Chris Pine's character making Harry Styles' character dance in that scene? Oh, which I admit was quite funny.
But the earthquake was because they were building the new world, wasn't it?
No, I thought the earthquake was when...
them leaving.
Was it not when they left the simulation?
Yeah.
No, but it wasn't, because there was an earthquake and he was still there.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought, is because they were building the world over, because it said, like, welcome to Victory 2.
Of course, yes, yeah,
and
yeah.
And I thought it was just, like, a whole thing of, like, they were doing construction and building the
expanding. Makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Because then she was like, oh, they're building right behind our house and we'll be closer to town. And she's like, how is that closer to town? And she's like, because we won't be the furthest from the way.
I loved that line. I thought it was so funny.
Very good line.
Comedy gold. Furthest from town. So we'll be closer to
that. I think the screenplay is actually pretty decent. Like,
yeah,
there's some like proper cracking stuff in there.
Same writers as Booksmart. What did you expect? It's fantastic. But the thing is because it was like, it was adapted from a screenplay on The Blacklist, which was written by two men.
Yeah,
and then everyone read it.
The sons of Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah, and then everyone read it and was like, this one's so much better. It's like, no.
No, it's...
it isn't. It actually would have made me turn off the film and leave.
We spoke about this on Annapurnaverse, about saying that, like, films from a female perspective... Like, there are certain films where you just are so glad that it is told from a female perspective, and this is mm-hmm. one of those films. Like, I just... Yep. I can't imagine... Well, first of all, let's get this straight. If this film was directed by a man, it probably would have like 70-80% on Rotten Tomatoes, and there wouldn't have been any controversy.
Yeah, and probably would be getting Oscar nods.
Yeah, it'd be like an awards darling. Like, so yeah, and like, I just feel like if this story was told by a man, it just would have been like incredibly problematic. Oh yeah, and then everyone being like, "Oh, what happens when she gets out of the simulation? Make your own mind up about that."
Yes. Make your own mind up about whether she even gets to be free.
She's tied down to the bed. She might struggle to get out.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say, she's just going to have to lie next to her dead husband for the foreseeable.
But also, there's that openness of, like, maybe she got put back in the simulation, because the gas would be the same as if she came out. So it's like, does she even get to be free?
Mm.
Because they would have known where he lived.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she could have been there, and then, you know, straight back in, or they killed, like, who knows? We don't know. And that's fine.
Yeah,
it's
that's
fine
the good
to
thing.
Not know.
Let
don't
us think.
Know everything.
One thing I would like to know, I will admit, mm-hmm. I'll admit this myself, is Gemma Chan's character and her motivations through killing...
Do you think she knew that she was in a simulation?
Yes, I think that her and Chris Pine came up with the thing together, because me and my husband were talking about this. And I was like, well, I think it's because they came up with the idea together. And then she was like, oh, these men just, they just are making this a living nightmare. I'm going to kill him and I'm going to take over from the whole thing.
Basically, men taking credit for...
Exactly. For women's ideas.
I mean, that's basically the whole narrative of the entire thing and the entire film and the entire production. It's just messy. Very messy.
Everyone was talking about how, I think a lot of them just didn't like the fact that the incelification of Harry Styles. I just don't think they liked that he'd been turned into an incel. And that was it. Someone was like, he's not a very menacing character. I was like, that's the fucking point.
Yeah.
Literally the point.
I don't think it was entirely necessary to make him so greasy, maybe. But, like, at the same time... because I think people... If you hear the word incel, apart from Jordan Peterson, you pretty much think exactly what Harry Styles looks like at the end of that film. And obviously this is meant to be a thing of anybody could do it. But the whole point of the film is that inside the simulation is perfect, so outside of the simulation needs to be like as horrible as possible. Mm. And him being like that is like an exemplification of that, of it being horrible.
Mm. And I feel like it was also like a gradual decline, wasn't it? Because they saw him just like having lost his job and then kind of... I agree, like there... That is like stereotype 101.
Oh,
and kind of like boxed it into like one version of men do this. But then like the point is that, yeah, them being in the simulation and looking the way they do, they're still the same men. So it's like, it's all men. Olivia Wilde said all men and everyone got in an uproar.
But it's like people were getting annoyed that he wasn't like a stereotypical villain, and that he needed more bite and teeth. And I was like, but that you don't see, when people get like assaulted and murdered by men, you don't sit there and go, oh, they look like a villain. And so when people were like, he didn't remind me of a villain, he wasn't menacing enough, he wasn't this, I was like, but like that is the point. Like it's supposed to be like this could be anyone. And I do admit like. Maybe they could have made him less greasy and less, like, stereotypically incel-y as he sits there listening to his sexist podcast. But it's just, like, the whole point was that... And I think it was quite smart, in a way, to have someone like Harry Styles play that part, because he's seen as this, like, heartthrob that all the girls love. And it sort of challenges that view, because you see him in the in Victory and he's like this perfect looking man, and then everyone's like, oh, actually no, he's a nasty piece of work who, despite saying he loves Alice and he never wanted to hurt her, when she's like, can we leave this place, not even knowing that they're in a simulation at that point, she's just like, can we leave, he's like, sure, then calls the people to come collect her because he thinks that his world is more important than hers and his life is more important than hers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of, like, the looks, obviously, it's such a massive problem in Hollywood, isn't it? And I feel like we as an audience have been conditioned, like, just so blatantly to only believe people are villains if they've got, like, physical disfigurements or... Like, I blame James Bond, mainly.
Yeah.
You know, I think literally every Daniel Craig James Bond villain had like a facial scar or something like physically wrong with them. So I think when that idea is challenged, people are like, oh, actually, that's not what a villain should look like.
It's quite interesting as well, because I guess in a way, like, Shia LaBeouf looks like an incel. Like, if you looked at Shia LaBeouf, you'd be like,
well, I think Shia LaBeouf is an incel. I know that there's some people who have said that, like, oh, Shia LaBeouf would have been good in this role, and I mean, I kind of agree with them in the fact that it probably wouldn't have been acting for him, really. Which is, you know, it's a problem. I mean, he's a terrible person, and it's good that he got fired, because he's literally openly admitted to being an abusive person. So, you know, he doesn't deserve to go near a film production or a TV production ever again in his entire life. But I wouldn't say Shia LaBeouf specifically, but I would have been interested to see who else would have been considered if not Harry Styles.
Yeah. The thing is as well that like everyone was talking about, like, oh, Shia LaBeouf would be amazing in this role. I don't care. I don't want to see him on my screen ever again. And his little redemption tour that he's going on. But, I was like,
this is what I wanted to say was like with the, and everyone was so invested in that and they were sharing the video that he shared of Olivia Wilde. And like, regardless of the context and like what it seems like from what he shared, like you have to question the intentions of someone coming out to do that, to like piling on a woman. Deciding that like, oh, well, actually my reputation's more important and I'm going to do this. Like, and then everyone was then kind of dropping their morals to protect him and being like, look, he shared this and we should all think this about her. And I'm like, why are people so desperate? I cannot wrap my head around why people are so desperate to hate her.
When I watched that video, like, I'm not a huge Olivia Wilde apologist in this situation. Like, obviously, I don't think it's great that she used the phrase myth flow and all of that bullshit.
Yeah,
100%. But I also think that it looked like a director doing damage control. That's what it looked like to me. It was her thing, like, looking at whether she could save the cast that she'd brought together or whether she did have to look elsewhere. Now, should she have worded the things the way she worded? No. And I also think that celebrities, if you're listening, you gotta stop recording yourself saying shit. But it's like, it's like, yes, okay, what she said was bad and it should definitely be like looked at. Like, you can't be sat there being like, I'm a feminist and I claim, you know, happiness of all women and all this stuff, and then saying shit like that. But also, like, context is important in these conversations. And to me, it just looked like she was just doing damage control. Did she handle it well? No. But then the immediate pylon from everyone to talk about this woman and say, see, we told you she was a bad person. She doesn't deserve Harry Styles, which is what it boils down to, is people not liking who she's dating. It started with Harry Styles.
He's a poison chalice.
It's
like... there's a handful of men, famous men, who if you touch them, you're done. You turn to ash. That's it. It's over. Because there are people who are fans of that person that will never be able to grasp the fact that they can't be physically with that person.
Mm.
And if somebody else does, then it turns into jealousy, and then that jealousy turns into hate, and that hate filters through, and then that's where the dog pile comes from.
Yeah, it's parasocial relationships. It's this idea that you're friends with or you know, whatever, with these celebrities that you don't really know. And I completely respect that people have a lot of you know, a place in their hearts for Harry Styles, so to speak, because he was in One Direction. He's a big part of people's teenage years. He's a big part of people's teenage years now as a solo artist. People really admire him and his music, and I completely respect that. He is very good at what he does in the music world. But ultimately, like, I feel sorry for both him and Olivia Wilde, because if, you know, there's no confirmation whether they are or aren't dating, but if they are dating, it's like, let them just exist and be happy. And these poor women who date these celebrities, and then, and you know, and men is what happens to men as well, it's like this whole idea of like, no, you're not allowed near him, you're not good enough. Why do they have to prove to you that they're good enough for this person's attention? Because that person's already given them attention. It's none of your business whether they're good enough for them or not.
Yeah, and it just began this like massive spiral of people just making things up and just saying things. And I've been questioning it for years, like, or I remember, because I think it happened, it started happening maybe in earlier this year or like end of 2021, when people were just on one with her. And I think it started actually with the like divorce papers.
Mm.
It got bad with the divorce papers. It was already happening with like the Harry Styles business. But then it was like, oh, here we go. She's a terrible mother. She never sees her children. And then her child is literally in the film, by the way. And then like... just all of these random things that people decide are true. And it's like, at some point you have to remember that these are like actual people and they're fallible and like capable of making mistakes the same way that we are.
Also, it's none of our business.
Literally so true.
It's none of my business.
And that's another, I mean, the divorce papers thing, again, bar it not literally not being our business, it is another example of wanting to defend the man over the woman. Because
because of Ted Lasso.
I genuinely believe people just think that Jason Sudeikis is Ted Lasso. He's not. He's Jason Sudeikis. Like, ironically enough, people can't separate reality from not reality, which is
an interesting thing. And it goes back to this whole film being about the press tour.
Because people can't separate, like, performances from the actor. It's like about how this whole thing about separating art from the artist, and that's like a whole other thing that will take 72 hours to probably argue as it is. But yeah, it's just so messed up. And like you said, we will never know who is to blame in that situation. So shut up.
The likelihood is neither of them.
Yeah.
Both of them would have had things, and I'm sure that they're also things that, like, because that's a real marriage. That's just not just like some kind of TV show or movie that you can make up in your mind. Like, that happened, and they were together for a really, really long time. And then to like have to go through that publicly while you're both also doing projects. And I'm like, people just don't think about the implications of what they're saying nowadays. And it's actually so, so hurtful, because so she's seeing this stuff, and then eventually maybe her children will see this stuff. And it's like, just think about what you're posting and the implications that it's going to have on these people long term, regardless of whether you think, oh, they're so famous, they're never even going to see it, I can just say what I want. It's like, that's actually not the case.
I think it's almost satisfying for people to have, like, to cancel someone. I read a book, you've probably all heard of it. Is that So You've Been Publicly Shamed book by, I can't remember his name.
I've not heard of that, actually.
John Ronson, I think, or something. And he talks about how he talks to literal real, like, not celebrities, like everyday average people who've been cancelled online for saying stupid things or posting stupid things back when the internet was relatively new and they didn't realise the reach of some of these things. So there was a story of, like, this girl, this one woman who made a joke about when she was on her way to a different country, and then she arrived at that country and she had essentially been told that she was fired from her job because of this joke she'd made to her, like, 12 followers that had then been retweeted constantly. And in this book, this guy talks about how these people aren't bad people. They've had a bad moment and they've then been cancelled for it. But the pylon is because people enjoy it. And he harks back to, you know, when people used to, back in the day, used to watch people get executed and whatnot. It's this idea of people liking seeing someone's fall from grace more than anything else. And they like being involved in that. And I think we see that with women a lot, particularly in the film industry, because they're held to such a higher standard and they're expected to be perfect and do everything correctly. You see it with, like, Amsterdam right now being, you know, talked about, and how it's all the women who are getting the pylon for being in the film. Yet there's one of those actors that's been, male actors that's been in multiple films with this director, and he's not getting a single piece of hate. So you just sort of sit there and you think, well, why are we expecting certain people to be brilliant and perfect and do everything right, but then other people aren't expected to do the same thing?
And it's absolutely, like, this thing of, like, exactly what you're saying about, we expect women to be perfect, but we also expect women to make perfect movies, and we don't let them, like, make a bad film. Like, so many male directors make a second or third, fourth, tenth film and it's bad, right? Or it's just, like, it's not as the high quality as others. And I think Don't Worry Darling is great, and I don't think that it is a bad film whatsoever. But yet people are like, oh, she made Booksmart and then she made this, and it's like, well, that's that now. And it's like, why do you, like, revel in the idea that she may never be able to make a film again? And why do we expect women to have to make, like, these five-star Oscar-winning movies every single time they, like, touch a camera? It's ridiculous.
I can also guarantee that those people saying that probably didn't give a crap about Booksmart when it came out.
Yeah, because Booksmart flew under the radar.
Yeah,
it did. As much as it's beloved, it really didn't reach the people that it should have reached, and they would have reached if it probably wasn't made by a female, to be honest.
And also the thing is as well, like, this is so different from Booksmart. It's a completely different genre, so of course there's going to be little hiccups and things that aren't perfect, because it's not something she's used
it's
to direct.
It's her second film, it's her and second it's ever so film amazing. Yeah. Like the accomplishment behind it, like some of the shot, the things that like you have to do to get that made, like the car chase in itself is a whole thing to wrap your head around. And like she has a vast career and she's been acting for a really long time, but like that's like the fact that she made that and that's her second film, like people have no grasp on like the actual intensity that it costs to make a film. It's wild to me. Olivia Wilde to me.
Wild. There's loads of little bits in the film as well. It's like one of my favorite moments that I actually noticed in the cinema, and I was really proud of myself for noticing this, is when they're at the party and Alice goes to find where Margaret is, and she's getting given the pills by her husband, and then the husband draws the curtain across and there's a flash of,
yes, I love that cut so
of
much.
Alice's face in the simulation, and I spotted it. And I went, "Oh!" And then later on, I was like, oh, "I wonder if that was what I thought it was." And I saw people posting about it and talking about it, and I was like, "See, this is like, no one can tell me that this is a bad film when it has little attention to details like that." When I was like thinking about like what I thought was wrong with it, there were certain characters that I would have loved to have been like explored a little bit more, but also at the same time, this isn't an ensemble film. This is Florence Pugh's movie. This is her part. I would never call this an ensemble film. There's other characters in it, but it's about Florence Pugh's character. So of course there were other characters that I would like to have seen more of, and I think it's worth us pointing out the whole thing with Kiki Lane's post, because I do think she should have been in the film a bit more,
at least notified as well.
Yeah, definitely.
I definitely think that
agreed.
Probably wasn't handled the way it should have been, and I don't quite understand why she was cut as much as is being suggested, because she is very integral to the plot.
Whether her being cut as much as she was an active decision, it probably was, and obviously that's not a good thing at all. I wouldn't necessarily say that her, like, even though she isn't in it for that long, I still felt the impact of her character to the plot.
But I think, you know, it is a fair argument to be like, okay, these were the two only, you know, she was the only black actress in the movie. Am I right in saying that?
I think that's right.
She was cut from the film. I understand the annoyance. I understand people being like, okay, I've got to query this and I've got to question that. You've got to ask those questions. You've got to have those difficult conversations. Even if it's a director that you love, you have to be able to go, okay, well, why did you do that? Was that just circumstance? Was that just accident? If it was an accident, you still should have really thought about that. Because I saw someone saying, oh, they shouldn't have introduced the glitches so early on. And I was like, when did you want them to introduce them then? Because like...
then it would have been too fast.
Because... well, like, they introduced him, what, it was like 10, 15 minutes into the film that we get our first glitch where she's, like, crushing the eggs. And I was like, this is a reasonable time to put this in, because otherwise, what, you get halfway through the film and they haven't had a single glitch, and then suddenly she's like, why is there a plane in the sky? You'd be like, where'd that come from? There needs to be a build-up. And she's there looking at these eggs, they're not real, and she's like, wait, this is really strange. And then she snaps back into what is her reality at that moment. When people were saying that, I was like, I don't get what you mean by that. I don't agree.
And I think the way that it kind of goes out of the simulation, but then goes right back into it again, and then kind of does the reveal, is also like I don't feel like it could have been done any other way.
Like one of my favourite shots was when she was on the operating table and they were like re-putting her into the simulation. Re-putting. Yeah. Great English there, Jess. And and she looks up and she sees herself as the surgeon. I thought that was a really clever cut to then move into the fact that that was what she did, and her remembering that and then going straight back into the simulation and forgetting it. And then that perfect acting moment from Florence Pugh where she rediscovers and re-remembers that she was in the simulation, and I've never seen acting like it. I was like, my God, like when she's like crying and like, you took my life and all of this stuff, I was just like, oh wow, this, like, she put her heart and soul into this moment. And I was like, so when people were saying about the pacing and like particular choices, it was so confusing to me because I didn't I didn't agree. Obviously, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. You don't have to like this film. I'm not forcing you to like this film. If you don't like it, that's fine. Mm-hmm. It's just the... I think what's weird about it is where films like this, where they're kind of like good films, some people enjoy them, some people don't usually get this level of attention that they are getting.
Yeah.
And because of the discourse, it almost feels like the anger and the disappointment in this film is almost unfair, because it's like, there's nothing wrong with the film.
The film's being judged off the 6 months before the film came out, not the film itself.
It's completely impossible to say that, like, people were able to watch it with a complete disassociate. And I would just love to know, like, if my mum went to the film and saw it, I would love to know her opinion, because she definitely has no idea of all of the nonsense surrounding it. Like, I want to hear those people's opinions. Like, what did you think of it? And did you like it? Did you not? Like, I just want someone whose mind is completely free of all the discourse. I want to know what they think.
Yeah.
Yep.
And unfortunately, when you're on like film Twitter, like we are, it's difficult not to involve yourself in that discourse, because it's there every single time you switch on Twitter. So it was interesting.
And that's why I muted
reaction.
It. I muted everything to do with it. I muted Florence Pugh, Harry Styles, Chris, everyone's name was muted, so I didn't have to hear anything about it. And then the day I saw it, I took all the mutes off and I was like, I should have just kept it on. Because every single tweet that came up, I was like, I just want to have some fights, but I'm not going to do it. It's not worth it.
The internet's one of those strange places. It's like being, you know, they call it chronically online now, don't they? Where it's like people are like constantly online, and their whole being is about being online. They reference it. And we all do it because we, you know, you sit there, you scroll through TikTok, you scroll through Twitter, and you see certain things and you're like, oh my God, that's hilarious. Oh my God, that's so dramatic. But ultimately, like, when I go to work, am I going to be sat there, like, making a cocktail? Like, did Harry Styles spit on Chris Pine? No! I'm too busy making a margarita. Like, I ain't got the time. I ain't got the time. And I'm like, I see these people who are posting on these things. I'm like, you be interested in whatever you want to be interested in. I'm not telling you to stop doing what you're doing. Not my place. But I have to question where you have the time. Like, where's the time? Because I'm sat here struggling to find time to eat sometimes, and then there was all these people online that are like, so I did this and I found out this, and if I do this timeline, and then I'm just like, where do you have the time? She says that she made a timeline for this literal episode. I found the time for this. But it's like constant, where you see these people running these Twitter accounts and they're constantly like posting all their conspiracy theories about different celebrities. I always think about it with is it pronounced Demois? I think that's how it's pronounced, which is the blind items website Instagram page, where they basically get people send in anonymous stories about celebrities and then they get posted. We all love a bit of drama. That's why reality TV is as popular as it is. But I just think, who's got the time to sit there and post blind anonymous items about celebrities that you don't know are factual? Like, we don't know if they're true, and they have so many implications on people's actual lives. Like, this potentially, this whole drama with this film could genuinely prevent Olivia Wilde from ever being able to direct a film again.
Mm. Which is terribly sad.
Yeah, and then I ask, like, who are we holding to this standard that we're not holding elsewhere? And it's always female filmmakers, and not just female filmmakers, but anyone who's not like a white straight man filmmaker. Mm. The fact that they can do things, it be documented, there be police records, and then they get to make another film. And yet this is so non-offensive, so like not harmful. No one got like a chair thrown at them. Like, none of these things that are actual dangers to people's like existence. This is just a bit of like petty drama at the end of the day. Like, ultimately, we don't know, obviously, like if there was verbal abuse and people saying there were screaming matches, and like maybe that, you know, that's, we don't know, okay? But like, the fact that the speculation is around something so, so petty, when there's been actual physical violence on film sets, and then those men have been able to go on and make a film with literally no quarrels whatsoever.
And, like, video evidence of that.
And video evidence.
And people just like, he's a genius. It's such a struggle for female directors to be recognised. And it's like, you, time and time again, you hear all these people, you know, we make... making jokes about when women aren't included in the best director lineup at the Oscars or whatnot, but it's like, I've heard you mention this before, Billy, on your Twitter, like saying that awards equal money at the end of the day.
They equal opportunities.
And opportunities. So if people win awards, like, we can all sit there and go, the Oscars don't really matter, but they do, for particularly for underrepresented directors, writers, actors, the whole lot. They have a huge impact on people getting other jobs and getting other opportunities. So when you have drama like this and it circulates at such ferocious speed, it only means that essentially we may end up losing a very good female director. But it's like, people were so surprised by, like, the fact that they didn't enjoy it, but, like, you're not going to enjoy every film.
Yeah, but I think so much of this idea of, like, not enjoying something is entirely down to the fact, the drama around it. Yeah. I don't even think people went in and gave it a chance. I sincerely think that a lot of people went in and were like, I'm going to be pissed off throughout this whole thing, and the only reason I'm seeing it is so that I can continue to be pissed off.
And I feel like...
I think people made their mind for going to see it.
That's, from a critic standpoint, I think that is... definitely the case. Like, you just write it off as soon as you go in. I think from a general audience perspective, and I don't know where this trend has started, where people think it's okay to go into a film on the first day it's come out and record the screen, because that's literally illegal. Like, it is literally piracy to do that. But it seems to be, I mean, I suppose it kind of started probably with No Way Home, didn't it, really?
Yeah, but it's fan culture. It's just like, people want that piece of cake.
Yeah.
And
then... So when that clip goes viral on Twitter and on TikTok, I feel like that also, like, really feeds into making a pre-existing opinion of how you're going to receive the film before going into it. Well as the drama.
I think it all comes back to, like, social media, honestly, and how it's entirely to do with festivals. And I think it's as we rise online and, like, we become more of, like, an online community, it's like a second world, honestly, like, being online. I think it is entirely to do with the fact that, like, there's a rise in digital criticism. Mm. And therefore, there's this whole thing of, like, and Alex and I have kind of had discussions about this before, of, like, the desperation to get something out instantaneously after you see a film, like, and this is the whole thing that they're trying to do with festivals, where they're embargoing things until, like, it's after the first public screening and no one can talk about it. Mm. I think that this film and the discourse around it speaks so much to where we're at with criticism and film criticism, and just a bunch of it. It's so intriguing to me, and I feel like there will be film professors decades from now, like, analyzing this release, because it is so interesting to, like, the moment, the cultural moment.
I was gonna say, as, like, two film critics, what your thoughts are on, like, all these critics, like, just completely trashing it with no real explanation.
It's shock value. I think it's entirely, like, and it's the same thing with Joker when it was at Venice, and I was there that year. People just coming out and just hyperbole, and it's the first, it's the idea of being the first, it's the idea of maybe being on a pull quote, grinding for opportunities, like, you need to be the first to respond and you need to have all of this, and it's a vicious, vicious world. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I completely agree. And I feel like there's a lot of people on Twitter who, when a certain film comes out, I mean, I don't want to, like, name names or anything like that, but there are people who, like, kind of take a line with films, and there are people doing it with Don't Worry Darling, and then they just run with it, and they literally, like, respond to any, it might even be to do with the film, but they'll respond to it and be like, oh, well, Don't Worry Darling was rubbish. or like,
yeah.
And I just feel like, who, like, what are you trying to achieve by doing such mm-hmm. a thing? I just, it doesn't make sense to me in any kind of way. Like, I just don't get it.
I really do just think it's a big, like, push into opportunity grabbing. And I actually don't blame people for it, because I am so guilty of it as well. Like, I've been at a festival film and I've sat and I've just found myself halfway through being like, how would I, like, articulate my feelings, like, on this film that would fit in a tweet? Like, I have definitely, like, thought of tweets before a film is finished. And I know that multiple people have done the same. Like, it's just impossible to separate the thing. And that's why, like, I saw Bones and All last night at New York Film Festival. And I came out and I was like, literally all I can say is I really liked Mark Rylance, because the rest of it, anything else I have to say would be, like, it would dip into spoiler culture. And I don't want to do that, because I think it's completely unfair that people shouldn't be allowed to watch, or, like, should have to know so much about a film before they even get the chance to see it. It's so unfair. Like, and I don't read reviews before I watch a film. I don't want to hear people's reactions. I'll mute things. My mute list on Twitter is actually a joke. Like, you've got to scroll for days before you're getting anywhere near what you want. Because I want the, like, authentic experience of going in and coming up with my own opinions on it. And I was so concerned going into Don't Worry, Darling, because I was like, I know too much, and I'm scared that, like, that's going to impact my viewpoint on this film. And I'm trying to think, oh, The Sun was another one. I saw it at Toronto, and I was like, I've heard too much about this film, and I'm expecting one specific thing. And, like, I felt one way about it, and I'm like, oh, but did you feel that way because of what you'd heard before? Like, are you actually coming up with your own opinions and feelings about this film? It's so difficult to know.
Yeah, and you find yourself being almost like, if you did enjoy it, I've had this feeling before where I've enjoyed a film and then I've seen someone's reaction to it online and I'm like, did I actually enjoy it? And it's like, well,
exactly, you question yourself. It's like, you're allowed to like things. Let yourself and like something.
I think some people are also worried about going against the grain as well, like being that one person.
Yeah, I saw a tweet this morning that was like, oh, what was it? Someone was saying exactly that they were like scared to like something because they were worried that instantly was just going to get a reaction. Oh no, it was like, if I say I don't like a film that you liked, it doesn't mean that I don't like you.
Yeah, people
whereas take people kind of like take it personally.
Yeah, they take it really personally.
And I, like, mock pretense when people say, like, they didn't like Lady Bird, and I take that personally. But I don't mean it. Like, at the end of the day, like, it's so inconsequential to the greater landscape of what's going on in the world. It's, like, it's just a film. And also, it costs millions of dollars, and that's, like, a ridiculous amount of money to be spending when the world's in a crisis. Yeah. Like, it's, there's just, I don't know.
To quote Kourtney Kardashian, there are people that are dying.
There are people dying.
And, like, I just feel like I get annoyed with the discourse with this film, because I just feel like Florence Pugh did such a fucking good job in this.
Yeah.
And, like, mm-hmm. acted her socks off. And, like, as an actor, you can tell, when I watched this, I was like, she's really come into her own as an actor over these last few years. And this is, like, the prime example of that. She's absolutely, like, tearing it up. And I just think, it just annoys me that there's all this discourse around it, because had there not been, would she have been in the discussions for Oscars? Would she have been in the discussion for award season? Would that have been the case? Because she does such a brilliant fucking job in this. And I get annoyed.
I wouldn't even be surprised if she was nominated.
I think she should be. Yeah. I'd like to hope that she would at least get a nomination, but you never know.
It must have been exhausting for her as well. She probably just wants to be like, oh my gosh, like, I did this. Like, I'm like, I know she's led films before, but, like, again, like, leading another film. And yet she can't even, I feel like, articulate genuinely. I know she's been putting, like, stuff on Instagram and things, but yeah, I don't know.
If we go off performance alone, this is her second best film.
Yeah. I've had a lot of people say that they think it's her best, like,
Yeah, but it's like, it's made by human hands, and you can see like how much that, like that production design, like there are so many things in there to like celebrate and be like, wow, this is such an accomplishment. And yet
the aesthetic of it is gorgeous. The set designs, the
cinematography,
gorgeous,
the costumes, but yeah,
cinematography, the incredible whole thing was so well
so
put together.
So many things to celebrate. Yeah, I think if anything, it's just like a massive cultural signpost to how much we still need to do in so many different aspects, not even just about female filmmakers, but about criticism, about like so many aspects of the film industry that I'm just, I don't know. I feel like the more we kind of discuss it and unpack it, like the more I'm pulling out of it, of like noticing how much it's correlating with so much that's going on in the real world.
Yeah. Basically, let's all get rid of Twitter. No, let's not do that.
This is the thing. I am desperate. And it's like part of the whole thing of like being in the film industry or being in some kind of media career is like, it seems so necessary and so vital to have this online presence. But I am desperately seeking the day that I cannot have it anymore. I can't wait to win an Oscar and delete my Twitter account. That is like immediate. To win an Oscar is like fantastic. That's that. No more Twitter, no more Instagram.
So I guess, I mean, I got asked, so do we think that this deserves to be Florence Pugh's worst rated film on Rotten Tomatoes?
No, absolutely not. I think it deserves to be at like 70-80%, like I said before. Absolutely.
Yeah, because the audience score is 77%, and that feels
correct.
That feels more correct.
Yeah,
that just says so much, because if it is just like people, I'm sure many of them who know to like go to Rotten Tomatoes definitely know about the discourse. I want to talk to those people. They sound like they know like how to deal with the internet. If you're listening, reach out to me, because I would like to know.
I just hope that this really doesn't stop her from making another film. I really, 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 really hope.
No. And I hope everyone's mental health involved is okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are real people, and it's just like, making a movie is hard. Being involved in a movie is like, being able to act in a movie is like a rarity. Like, there's a lot of actors in here who would have had to have gone through like long audition processes to be in this film. And then it finally comes out. You're like, I can finally show these people what I've been working on for however many months. And then it's all this discourse. It's like, it's so insulting to people who've worked really hard on it. And it's so unnecessary. And I just, like you said, Alex, I just hope that this doesn't stop her from making another film, because she is a good director. We saw that with Booksmart. Like, and we've seen it. We see it with this film. Like, I don't care what people say. It's well directed. And you just think, I hope this doesn't stop her from making other films. And I hope this doesn't stop studios from inviting her to make other films.
And just women in general, I think.
Yeah, there's that whole thing about like, oh, they're just too that whole thing, like, what, yesterday, saying that women are too emotional to be directors. I can't. I'm over
Someone
it.
Said that?
I yeah, there was something that. About like men are designed to be
directors. Yeah, what was all that about? Ugh.
Because they're physically strong and women are too emotional.
Yeah, was it
literally...
that like men have hunters are natural hunters are
yes, yeah, yeah, oh. Predators.
Oh no. No. Stop it.
Jess, you're lucky you didn't lucky you didn't see that one.
If we're talking about like caveman level hunter's eyes, then all you have to look at is Blonde, really, and Andrew Dominik, so.
Oh dear.
I'm not doing it.
Anyway, moral of the story is, movies are miracles. Can we celebrate them? Mm-hmm. Can we be nice? Can we just let women make movies and not hold them to a higher standard than everyone else? Mm-hmm. And can Olivia Wilde please make another movie in the future?
Amen. Well, I think we've wrapped up everything that we thought, pretty much, roughly. So thank you to everyone who joined us today for the absolute chaos. We will be back with normal Better Than Bad episodes soon. Don't worry. This was just a little extra, a little spicy extra, because we felt like we needed to talk about it. It had a lot of different
issues that we wanted to discuss. And also thank you to Alex and Billy for joining me today. I hope you had fun, as fun as it can be discussing. And yeah, I'll see you all next time on Better Than Bad.